This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Hello. So today I'm talking to Amanda Davey from Tilia Publishing. So Amanda writes books and produces greeting cards that celebrates the beauties and quirkiness of the world around us in all its richness. The underpinning idea is to help people learn more about what they can see around them without fully realising their learning. There's unpredictability and non-fiction, and that's definitely where Amanda's heart lies. So Amanda and I had a really interesting conversation about how she got started in photography and publishing her own books, and we also spoke about sort of the change in nature of her business and bringing it online in the last couple of years. So I really hope, as always, you enjoy this conversation with Amanda. I'm going to stop. Okay, are you good to go? So hi, Amanda. Thank you so much for being here.
It's lovely to be here.
Oh, thank you. So can we start with you please giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell?
So I am Amanda Davey and I run a business called Tilia Publishing UK. We write our own books and produce our greeting cards that celebrate the beauty and quirkiness of the world around us, the world around us, not just British world, but world. And we've been doing that since 2014 on the greeting cards, 2015 on the books. And it's a great, great thing to do.
So how, so I know that you got started in 2014 with a card. So how did you get started and what inspired you?
Well, I've always taken photographs since I was given a Kodak Instamatic at the age of 10, but got frustrated with taking the tops of the heads of penguins rather than the full penguin, and then really got going with it when I got a single lens reflex where you can actually see through the viewfinder what you're photographing, but had never really done it on a commercial basis properly, and then in 2013 we were rammed by a bus at traffic lights twice. He hit us and I got fairly crippling whiplash, and that does sort of focus your mind about what your aims are, what you want to do, what you haven't yet started doing. And some of the recuperation was going around the South Downs taking photographs, and the shops that you go into in the South Downs, it's incredibly hard to find decent photographs of the South Downs. And so we started producing cards that related to the beautiful places in the South Downs, or we call them the nooks and crannies of the South Downs, because there are some lovely non-iconic places as well as the iconic places. And I also started working on my grandfather's autobiography, and that became our first published book, and that all came out of the mindset that was triggered by being rammed by a bus and in chronic pain.
That's such a scary experience. I'm so sorry you went through that. And what were you doing prior to that experience, as in were you doing something completely different, and was photography a hobby? Or
well I'm trained as a geographer and as a landscape architect.
Oh, wow.
And both of those embrace virtually everything. It is incredibly hard to find something that is not relevant to either geography or landscape architecture. And one of the jobs that I had, I used to do about 12 different things in the office. So I've always done a rich variety of different things. And when I went freelance in 2004, as doing support services to landscape architects and people related to landscape architecture, so a lot of our tree people, then that was also to keep that variety. And so the publishing is an extra client as part of the rich variety of the landscape world.
That's really nice to have such a variety of things. If you're the sort of person, which I know you are, Amanda, who enjoys having a variety in your days and your weeks, I think that's amazing to be able to do all these wonderful things that you enjoy and to do them all together.
Yeah, it's a Gemini trait. It's crucial, actually. It's like people say you should have a project. I need to have multiple projects because that's just how my mind works. And it enriches everything that I do to have other things that are going on at the same time. And so it's one thing that is lovely to share with other people as well when they enjoy it too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, your photographs on your cards are just beautiful. And you're right, it's such a lovely part of the country. And it really surprised me when you said you were going to shops and they didn't already have cards depicting the landscape, and because it seems to me sort of such an obvious thing.
Well, there are obvious places. So the Long Man of Wilmington. Well, we've got the Long Man of Wilmington, but he tends to kick up in various places. But it's a real. We certainly went into 2014. It was a real gap. There are art cards that there's a difference between the real landscape and the sort of filtered landscape.
So yeah, I see what you mean. So the Photoshop version.
Yeah. And what we're about is the real place that people walk. So we've got one about mud. The reality is so much richer, so much better, so much more beautiful than the toned, filtered, idealized view of roses round the door, etc. It's hard to get to the truth of where you are, but the truth of where you are is why you're there.
Yes, and I also think there's something quite nice, and I'm sure you probably hear this from customers, is that when you see a card and it's something, and it might be quite niche or unusual, sort of a bit out of the way, but you recognize it, you know, you have that little bit of joy where you're like, I know that puddle. Well, that's not a good example, but you know what I mean. I know that whatever it is, you just get a little, ooh, I know what that is. And that's really nice. Whereas I mentioned I live in Tunbridge and we have a really beautiful castle, and there's lots of pictures of the castle and postcard, various things you can get with the castle on. But when you occasionally see something with a different landmark or a different outlook, it's like, oh, I recognize that. And it
exactly
and in a way that's much more appealing than the really obvious thing.
Well, that's our mindset, definitely. And so we've got one of reeds in the Ouse Valley, the River Ouse Valley down below Lewes. And you can walk along various stretches of that and see that image. It doesn't have to be that particular spot.
Yeah, absolutely. But it will take people to that spot in their minds.
Yeah. And having walked in that particular sort of habitat, actually, it doesn't even have to be the Ouse. You can get it on the Ada and the Arun as well.
So when you started out and with your cards, and you saw that there weren't shops selling, was your goal to start selling your cards in these local shops, or was it always to sell the cards yourself on your own site?
In 2014, we didn't even have a website, and the website wasn't really in our heads. We were going to sell retail. There's a lovely organisation called the Ladder Club, which is greeting card producers. It's like a training program for greeting card producers and support place. And they do a lot of retail, and you go to the trade shows, and we were doing a lot of small fairs and small fairs to see what people's reactions were to the cards and to learn about who our market were, to then give us the confidence when we went into the retailers and were promoting the cards to them. And that was interesting. It's an interesting retail landscape, though, the South Downs. It's not your ideal. Somewhere up north is fantastic, but South Downs is a tougher gig, because it's very intense. There's a lot of people trying. And so we were selling in bookshops and tourist information points, and at these small fairs. We didn't flourish at the trade show that we went to, because Theresa May had announced a general election the day before. So there was risk aversion. So as a new publisher at a trade show, you need to have people very confident. And so if people are not confident in the slightest, then they will only go to the people that they actually have dealt with before. So that was one of life's little lessons, I suppose, in coping strategy. Since the pandemic, sadly, some of our retailers have gone. And so the focus is much more on the website. And as you know, the pressure to open up on Amazon is building. So we're probably moving more towards our online presence as a result of all of that.
Yeah, thank you for explaining all of that. Was it after COVID, so post 2020, that you actually set up your website?
The website was set up in 2015 in a big, big rush, because we launched my grandfather's autobiography in the September, and then, oh, whoops, where are people actually going to be able to buy it? Because in the time of working on it, when I was first working on it, we had a publisher, but my grandfather was absolutely adamant that his guidance to me was to do short, pithy sentences. And this lovely publisher who had agreed to take on his book, wanted his book, craved his book because of who he was, he wanted to string the short, pithy sentences together into longer sentences, which seemed very odd in this modern era where you're supposed to do short, pithy sentences. So, because it was such a big deal and it was obliterating the author's voice, we decided to self-publish, given that the skills were in-house anyway. And so launched it in the Institution of Civil Engineers Library in September. Mad panic. Oh, whoops, we need a website. And thanks to meeting somebody at a networking event, the next day she met somebody else who worked for a business that actually did do the sort of website that we needed. We were up and running in December, because e-commerce websites are not as fun as I've worked on loads of websites, but an e-commerce website needs to sit on a totally different structure to a bog standard sort of leaflet type website.
Of course.
course. And then there's all the added functionality as well that you need to have, and the data protection and the ability to take payments and all of that. Yeah, it's I'm not surprised actually how popular sort of e-commerce website builders have become, things like Shopify, because I imagine to create a website of all that functionality that looks good, that works from scratch, isn't an easy thing to do.
No, it's not easy to do, even when you have actually been used to using HTML and building the leaflet type websites. So our website provider is Create. They're called Create. They're based in Brighton and they are ethical. So that's an extra boon. It's a nice price. They're incredibly responsive. And it's been a total joy to have them ever since December 2015. So that's quite a few years now.
That's a really long time. But it sounds like you weren't really focusing on the website as much initially.
No, it was just a presence, really. We had other options at that time, and the options are now much more online. So, yeah, that's how the world has gone.
Yeah. So remind me, when did you take the decision to say, okay, we're going to put our entire range onto the website and really start selling there?
Well, they've always been lurking there. We thought, well, retailers can have a look, but the retailers don't go have a look. Not that way. They like to have the printed matter. Well, certainly they did when we were really pushing them. All feedback from retailers gratefully received, if I'm doing it wrong. But they need more words, so we've been putting more words in because Google likes words.
Oh, okay. So in terms of the actual words count on the page.
Yeah, different words. They don't like repetitive stuff.
I think with websites, something I'm certainly learning is there's always something to do. You know, you think you've cracked it, and then either advice changes or you just learn more, or you learn something that you just didn't know. I shared actually, it was on another podcast episode, that I didn't realize what alt text was for on images. I had been given the impression that the alt text was to aid with SEO, but of course that's not what it's for. It's to help people who can't actually see the image. So that obviously resulted in quite a big job sort of on my website, updating the alt text for every single image, which is really worthwhile and I'm pleased I've done it. However, I feel like, you know, soon there will be something else. I think a website is always evolving, isn't it? And even if you've got a fantastic website that looks good and works really well, it's certainly not something you can just, well, I think if you want a successful website, that whatever your aims are, and obviously when I say successful, that will depend, you know, for everyone, that's different. But I certainly think that you do need to work on it, because something else I've learned, which I'm sure you're also aware, is that Google likes it when you update your site. So you can't just set it up and leave it, which I was certainly guilty of when I had my products business. I had a really lovely Shopify site, and something I was definitely guilty of was going, well, I've got a really nice site, so I can leave that now and that will take care of itself. Actually, not really the case.
No, and I'm still trying to get my head around that alt text thing. That was absolutely fascinating, that insight that she gave on that. I thought alt text was sort of, yeah, well, I'll do that someday. So now when I'm putting new things, I'm much better at putting alt text in. Not perfect. It's a work in progress, but
I think most things for a lot of us are a work in progress, are they? Because we can't be perfect at everything. I think as long as we're sort of consistently improving,
doing our best.
Yeah, I think. And I think even on the podcast episode we're referencing is one I did with Jodie about accessibility, which I'll link in the show notes. And something she was really clear on is that, you know, you don't have to do everything and you don't have to do everything now. But as long as you have good intentions and you're trying to improve and you're making small steps, then that is progress. Yeah, so nobody worry that you need to go and do anything on your website right now to make it more accessible. I think as long as, you know, as you're saying, as you're adding more images, you're being conscious of that, I think that's great. I just wanted to come back to when you were selling just in stores. Well, not just in stores. I know you were selling in markets as well, but how did you get your products stocked in those stores and information centers? Was it a case of walking in and saying, do you want to sell these? Or was it something more than that? And I know we're going back 6 years here and things may have changed, but I'm always curious as to how you actually get your stuff on the shelves.
Yeah, apparently what you're supposed to do is ring up and make appointments. We didn't do that because we thought that would immediately get them saying no. When you're very early doors, you don't have that we've been going for the last 8 years. So that gives you a bit more credibility if you've got a bit of longevity when you're trying to make those calls. But in the early days, we were just sort of going in with a stack of cards and smiling nicely. And one lady was absolutely horrendous. She decided to stop having cards, which seems to me to be very odd, because there is an initiative called Just a Card, where if somebody goes into a retail outlet and buys just a card, just one card from that retailer, that could mean the difference between them succeeding or failing. So why people would stop stocking cards, I don't understand. But anyway, that's just odd. She was odd. She was very rude. Some of them just went, oh, wow, yes, please. That was nice. Some of them said, leave them with us and we'll have a think. There's different stages, different layers that you go through. So a lot of the big card producers have spinners that they put into shops. So this is why you'll see so many of the spinners. And then they have an agent who will go in and check and make sure. And then there's invoices and stuff that go with that. But we've never been in that league. We've been smaller numbers. And there's a lovely bookshop in Petworth who that sale came about as a result of buying a map and chatting about why I was buying the map. And so he said, oh, I'd love to see your cards. So I went out to the car, got them, took them back in. So we've had several years of working with him on the back of buying a map.
Yeah, see, that's a really nice story. And I don't know much about rights and wrongs of getting stocked in retailers. It was never a route I went down myself, I'll be honest. But I do think there's a lot to be said for the personal touch. And I am sure that if you're in a position to, walking in with your product and saying, would you like to look at this? I imagine is probably one of the best things you can do, because they get to see you, they get to see what you're selling. Whereas, you know, on email, it's all a bit detached, isn't it? And I think there's a lot to be said from, hello, this is me and this is what I have and do you want it? And I think it makes it a lot easier for someone to say yes or no, because there they are, they're there. They can see what you have.
Yeah, I think the trouble is it's hit or miss. Sometimes, say if you get the wrong time of day or yeah. if they're desperate for a sale and you're in there, then that can make them panic. It's been a very interesting ride. The dealing with the retailers, right? Because everybody has a different personality, and so how you deal with the different personalities can affect how successful you are with working with them. So some need very florid and some need just very businesslike, and that's so unpredictable.
Absolutely. And while I think that I personally like the idea of just being able to say, okay, here I am, and this is what I have. But then, of course, you have to take into account that not everyone likes that. Not everyone wants to just be approached. It can feel a bit hostile or a bit too much, can't it? And then also, you just don't know someone's situation. Like you say, you don't want to turn up at their busiest time of the day or the time when, I don't know, they've unboxing new stock or whatever it is. It is really tricky. So, but it sounds like you've taken a great approach.
We had a lovely one where there'd been an event in the greeting card industry, sort of Meet the Dragons is what they call it, I think, where the big retailers were meeting the newer publishers, I think, or certainly a range of the publishers. And we weren't able to go to that, and we've yet to go to it. But it was running, I think it was running for 5 days. And on the Thursday, we got a phone call from one of the retailers that had been at that event on the back of something that had been in one of the greeting card press things, saying, could you take us some photographs because we want some local views.
Oh, wow.
Because they hadn't actually met anybody at that event, and they'd gone there looking for people who would do local views. So because they hadn't found them, they approached us. And that was really, really lovely. So that generated some rather nice pictures, actually. That was fun to do.
And are you expanding your range still? I'm imagining you are, from what I know of you, Amanda. I'm sure you can't help yourself. So is the card collection growing?
Well, we've just launched this month or last month, flower cards.
I saw those. I didn't realise they were new. Okay.
Yeah, they're brand new. Yeah. It was lovely. I was able to send one to my mother for Mother's Day. She lives just outside Inverness. And it's of a peony. And she always, always had peonies in the garden. And it meant a lot to us personally, but it was lovely also to be able to send it to her as a sort of the first celebration card of that. So,
okay, thank you. And you've mentioned that now you're selling more sort of through your website. So have things have things changed? I think you touched on the fact they had, and how have things changed in terms of how and where you're selling your cards and books?
The plan to go on Amazon is hatching some little green shoots. I've been very wary of Amazon because of some of the problems that relate to it, as well as the joys of its complexity. But because so much more is done online now in terms of what people buy, certainly our target market being, I would think, almost predictably longer in tooth than the sort of average human being. So the older generations are spending more time buying online than they used to as a result of the pandemic. So it's better for us to be more available online. And they are being very loyal to the shops as well, but the shops aren't being so loyal to us. So that's a big thing that will happen. It was supposed to have happened in February, but it didn't. So much more focus on that side of things for us. She says in a garble.
That's exciting. So yeah, so moving on to Amazon, sounds like that's one of your next ones. And are you looking at any other online marketplaces as well, or are you just thinking Amazon for now?
Thinking Amazon for now, because we don't hand make our stuff, we get slaps on a lot of the craft maker type side of things, and because of the books, Amazon is a bit of a a no-brainer, really.
Yeah. With the cards, though, something you might find actually interesting is I was having an interview today, and I'm hoping everyone listening to this finds this interesting, because the interview I'm referencing won't be going out until July, with an Etsy expert who mentioned that now Etsy accepts applications from people who may not produce the product themselves as long as it's their original work. So, for example, cards where you take the image yourself, so it's not handmade, but it's personalized, it's made by you, I'm trying to think of a way of saying it. Now, and I was unclear as to whether this was okay now or whether this was something that was in the pipeline, but it's changing. She also referenced, you know, for example, textile products where maybe somebody designs the products, but the actual printing has to be done by somebody else because maybe that person doesn't have a printing press or whatever. And apparently it's moving more in that direction, which I thought was interesting and also maybe gives opportunity. So I thought I'd mention in case it helps you and of course everyone listening as well, because I was under the impression it was solely things you'd made yourself with your own hands. So I was really interested to hear that. And as I say, that interview isn't going out for a while. This will definitely be out first. So hope that's helpful.
Yeah, that could be very helpful, because it's been very frustrating to take our own photos. We've also got my mother's paintings. Those are the only ones that we have. But we used to print our own Christmas cards. We send a lot of Christmas cards every year, and we used to print them on a printer at home, and just once a year that was bad enough. But to have to do it all year round, I don't know how people do it. I really don't. So we have a Printworks in Kent who do our printing for us. They're greeting card specialists. They do a fabulous job. All our printing is done in the UK.
And fairly local as well, because you're in Sussex, aren't you? So Kent's not...
Yeah.
Too far. Not that it really matters in the UK, it's nothing's that far, is it? But it is nice that it's, you know, not
well, we've
too
got
far
the occasional the, the occasional thing is printed in Glasgow, but apart from that it's all Sussex, Kent or London.
That's really nice. It's nice when you are able to support other local businesses with things like that.
It's crucial. I couldn't send it to China, not with all the sea in between. It just doesn't make sense. It's yes, the margins become extraordinary, but there's the planet to get involved with.
I'm also not convinced that the margins would be that great once you take into account the shipping and the import fees and everything else. I mean, yes, maybe slightly better, but when you sort of think it wouldn't be, yeah, when you weigh up the impact on the planet on top of that, I think for printed products, especially if you're able to print them somewhere local to you, because I think the cost of paper and ink, I've never looked into printing something myself, but I would like to think that it can't be much different in the UK once you take it, like I say, once you take everything else into account.
I think a printer would probably squirm with that question, but what you get with printing in the UK also is flexibility, because you don't have that huge great time lag that you have to have going and toing and froing from China or any of the other candidates
and the excess stock as well, because that's the other thing. If you're printing in China, presumably to make it worth you putting them on a boat and shipping them over here or putting them on a plane or whatever it is, it would need to be a fairly substantial order, whereas, and then of course if those cards aren't sold immediately, they might be sitting in a box for a while. There's that sort of element of it as well, whereas I guess if you're printing in the UK and the turnaround's pretty good, you can print smaller batches and just know that you're producing what you're reasonably going to sell, which is also nice in terms of not just producing lots of, I don't want to, waste isn't the right word. So, you know, I hope you know what I mean by that.
I know exactly what you mean. Yes.
I mean excess. Because there's nothing worse, is there, than sort of having boxes and boxes of something sat around that isn't moving. That's not a nice feeling, is it?
No, it's I got overexcited with one print run. I thought that it would do better than it did. So we do have boxes and boxes and boxes of that, but it'll shift. It does shift. So
I mean, I'm speaking of someone who's done exactly that. My first product the first product I sold was manufactured in China, and the first round I did, I ordered a lot and I got them all shipped over here, and then they did sell, but they took longer than I wanted, and there were boxes sitting around for a long, long time. And it's not a nice feeling. And then also sort of the waste element. I say waste isn't the right word, because I mean they were going to be sold, but I started to feel almost guilty thinking, well, I could have got half of this, and you know, it started to feel a bit wasteful. And I don't think that is exactly the right word that I mean, but it just felt like, you know, why did I get so many, basically, was what it came down to.
It's like having a nag, isn't it? It's just sort of going at you.
Yes. And it just didn't feel, you know, because my products were all about sustainability. You know, they were products that were designed to last because I wanted them to be sustainable, but it didn't feel very sustainable having lots of boxes sitting around waiting to sell for some reason. I don't know. It didn't sit quite right.
No, I know exactly how you feel. I mean, you also end up with fashion changes. I mean, we've pulled two cards off the website because they were of Russia. And what's very interesting is that one of them was a major, major seller at shows and events, and not in shops. It did sell in shops. So that's until 2016, when suddenly Putin's involvement in certain political events around the world meant that nobody wanted anything to do with Russia anyway. It was absolutely fascinating, that complete nosedive. It went from being pretty much our top seller after the Penguins to not selling a single thing, just because of the toxicity, even then, of what he was building up to do. Fashion is absolutely fascinating, even in the greeting card industry, or particularly in the greeting card industry. You have colour themes that people go for, and we can have cards that don't shift, and you think, oh well, let's get rid of them then, and then suddenly, whoosh, off they go.
I guess there's a seasonality aspect as well. For example, your plant cards, I imagine, are going to sell really well throughout spring, because it's the time all the plants and flowers are springing up in people's gardens, and we're all getting, I'm getting very excited about seeing colour and things popping out of the soil. Yeah. And I guess there's always going to be, and I imagine wintry landscapes maybe sell better at that time of year. But what's great, I think, about your business model and the fact you have your printing done locally and you can control it, is that presumably you can move cards in and out of your range as you need to. You can be adaptable, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's the idea.
So I have just one final question for you, Amanda, before we finish up, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that is, what would your number one piece of advice be for other product creators?
Can I do two?
Of course you can do two.
Advice we were given was, make your mistakes while you're small. But there's another bit of advice, and that is, be patient. Go for the long game. Not not try and do the get rich quick models, because they blow up and then down again very often.
Yeah, I completely agree. I love both of those pieces of advice, particularly what you said about making mistakes, because I think making mistakes is the best way to learn. Yeah. And, you know, it's nice. You're never going to get all of your mistakes out of the way, but I think you can get a good chunk of them out of the way in the first 6 months. I mean, from my experience, I'd say the biggest mistakes I've made in my business were all right at the outset, you know, the big ones. And yeah, because as soon as you made them, then you can learn from them and move on. So, I mean, of course, I'm still making mistakes now. I'm sure that everyone's still making mistakes now. But I think, you know, there's nothing like the mistakes you make when you're first starting out.
Yeah, it's because your reputation isn't there. So you can make the reputation damaging ones when you're tiny. But the thing is not to be scared of making mistakes.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I think a lot of us think that sort of all eyes are on us and everyone's going to notice these things that we do. But actually, very few people, I think, notice or care even about some of the things that we're doing. I think everyone's wrapped up in their own thing, aren't they? But sometimes a fear of what people think stops people from trying. But actually, I think a lot of people aren't really watching what you're doing. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. I'm of course friends and family, you know, always supporting, but I mean the general public, I don't think really notice.
Yeah, they've got other things on their minds most of the time.
Yes, that's very reassuring. Thank you. And thank you so much for everything that you've shared. And yeah, I mean, that's what this podcast is all about. It's sharing experiences and learnings, because I think that we can all learn from each other and hopefully avoid some of those mistakes.
Yeah. Learning from other people's mistakes is that underpins my grandfather's book, by the way. It's very healthy to learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. As I say, it's a whole, well, not the whole, but one of the aims of this podcast is for people to be able to listen to others' mistakes and learn from them, because that's how, you know, when I started out my business, all I was doing was sharing the things I was doing wrong, because it felt like at the beginning everything was wrong, until you get to a point where actually the curve goes up and you're making less mistakes and you're doing more things right. But I think it's so invaluable, isn't it, to know the pitfalls that other people fell into, so you can avoid them yourself, because none of us know what we don't know.
Yeah, no. And also not to feel that it's just you, that everybody goes through this stuff. That's a reassuring one as well, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's so reassuring, because sometimes you have a bit of imposter syndrome or feel like, you know, what you're doing is on full view of the world and you're just failing publicly, but you're not, and everyone else is, and no one even cares that much. I think knowing all of that, while it sounds a bit harsh, and I don't mean it that way at all, I think it is quite comforting to know that actually no one really thinks it's as much of a big of a deal as what you do, and no one's really watching, and everyone else is doing the same and probably worrying about the same things.
Have you heard the story of the frogs climbing the Eiffel Tower?
No, I haven't.
There's a whole load of frogs were climbing the Eiffel Tower, little hoppy frogs, and one by one they fell back down. The crowds down the bottom were jeering at them, going, "You'll never reach the top of the Eiffel Tower, you're far too small." And then eventually one of them got to the top, and interviewed by the press afterwards, they discovered that he was deaf.
Wow. Makes you think, doesn't it?
So, just go for it. It's the underpinning thing, isn't it?
Well, thank you. Thank you for ending that positivity as well. That's a really nice place to finish. Thank you so much for all you've shared. I've loved talking to about you. Obviously, I was aware of you and what you did, but it's really lovely to get to actually ask you questions about your business and find out more. So thank you for sharing your time with me.
Thank you for sharing it with me, the podcast.
I know what you mean. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening all the way to the end of this episode. If you enjoyed it, please do leave me a review. That really helps other people to find this podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and do tell your friends about it too if you think that they also might enjoy it. You can find me at vickyweinberg.com. There you'll find links to all of my social channels. You'll find lots more information, all of the past podcast episodes, and lots of free resources too. So again, that's vickyweinberg.com. Take care, have a good week, and see you next time. Hi, this is just a little note. Say if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.